Welcome to Writers Talking TV, brought to you by the Writers Guild of Canada. I'm Carol Hay, and I'm a screenwriter on Murdoch Mysteries. Today's guest is award-winning writer Aubrey Neelan. Aubrey is the showrunner of the upcoming series Cardinal. Cardinal is adapted from Giles Blunt's award-winning John Cardinal books. The six-episode dramatic thriller follows Detective John Cardinal on the hunt for a brutal killer in a small Northern Ontario town. Cardinal will premiere on CTV in 2017, so this edition of Writers Talking TV is also a sneak preview of the first episode. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. Aubrey is a veteran series writer on many shows that you know, Saving Hope, Rookie Blue, Flashpoint, Orphan Black. Tonight we're going to talk about his latest project, which was also his first gig as a showrunner. A six-part series called Cardinal, which is based on the award-winning books by Giles Blunt. So he's going to tell us about his experience, his trial not by fire but by ice. It was a series that was shot over 3 months in the dead of winter in Northern Ontario. So, hi, Aubrey.
Hi.
You have to hold your microphone like this. A six-part limited series. It's a format that we're used to seeing from Britain, not so common in Canada. And in fact, this is a first for CTV, right?
That's right. Yep, their first limited series. I want to thank some people before we get started. I want to thank people who made the show. Giles Blunt, first and foremost. He wrote the novel that this series is based on. Sienna Films, Julia and Jennifer produced the film, brought the project to me, and then made it. And then CTV and E1 were really supportive of the show from the get-go, so I want to thank all those people, because it wouldn't have happened without them. Six-part series. I've been banging this drum for a long time that this is how long all television seasons should be, 6 hours long. I've been saying this since before it was cool. 6 hours is a perfect length of time to tell a story like this, a single-case story like this, long enough to engage in the characters and dig into stuff, but short enough to kind of shape a single season event. And so I was wondering why we weren't doing this all the time, and of course the answer is money. They're expensive to produce. But when the opportunity came to do it, that when this project was presented to me, it was presented as that format, and I was really excited about it for that reason.
But then you took on the appealing challenge of doing all six episodes yourself, writing all six.
Well,
so what drew you to the book and made you decide to take that on?
Naivete, I guess. I sort of accepted that challenge under the false idea that there would be time, that there would be time to craft it all and write every word and bring in story editors and do what needed to be done and sharpen it all down. And then we'd have it all done, and then we'd go into production. It just seemed like what an amazing opportunity if we could do it like that. And that's kind of those were the terms that I got into it on. But of course, it just doesn't happen that way. It never happened that way.
What drew you to the book in the first place?
The length of the six-part series. That's not true. That's the funny thing about that is I actually answered that once in an interview. It's like the wonkiest writer answer. And someone was doing some promotional interviews for the film, and she was really bubbly, and it was on production day, and I was totally fried, and I hadn't prepared, and she was like, "What drew you to the book?" And I was like, "The length of the series. It's a good length for telling a story." I could see her kind of go, "Dude, I'm trying to do an interview."
Now you have a chance to answer it properly.
Okay. I was really attracted to the length of the series. But when the book came to me from Sienna Films, and I didn't know them at that time, but I really liked them from afar and wanted to work with them. It was being developed at CTV, and I liked those guys. And so as soon as it hit my inbox, I was like predisposed to want to do it. So then I read the book, and I dug it. You kind of have a gut response to these things. That's kind of broad, the feeling it gives you. Can you see the story in there? Are there elements in there that are interesting to you? Do you like the people? Do you like the world? It kind of starts broad like that, and then you drill down. And I kept drilling down and just kept hitting stuff that was interesting to me. So it felt like a world that I could spend some time in, that I could dig some stuff out of, that was important to me. And there was a particular thing about it, like, it seems to me that the trend in police shows these days is that basically every detective is Sherlock Holmes and every bad guy is like Hannibal Lecter. It's like all way up here. Like every detective can walk in the room and see 19 different things and knows if you're lying and if you're not. And every bad guy is like concocting some kind of haywire, like operatic violence. And they go at each other. And it's obviously that's very entertaining, but I get kind of tired of that after a while. It's sort of like written in this pitch that's way up here and doesn't kind of allow for you to dig into more human stuff. So this book bucked that trend. Mm-hmm. It was very much, the police work is very much on the ground. The crime is quite simple that's at the center of all this. And so it felt like there was space in this world to actually like explore some smaller human stuff, which is ultimately the stuff that is interesting to me.
And we're going to get to talk more about that after we've screened the show. So you like the book. The producers, Sienna and CTV, liked you. So just give us a sense of when that was. You had about a year to work on the
I don't think it was quite pilot. A year to do the pilot, but it was kind of happening in stages. I was working on Orphan Black at the time, and I'm so bad at the dates. It's just this kind of smear that ends in Sudbury. That's kind of how it arcs out.
Let's try and break the smear down just a little bit. So you, the first job presumably was to figure out how you were going to break this into 6 episodes.
Yes.
And so how did you go about that? What were the key touchstones you decided to look for? Or, you know, how did you go about that task in a nutshell?
It felt, when you read the book, there it seemed to kind of slot into episodes in a way that was fairly straightforward, it felt to me. Some development work had been done on the project as well before I got there. So some kind of spade work had been done. I don't know, that part of it felt kind of straightforward. You kind of read through, you look for kind of high moments, you start to look for endings of episodes, and it seemed to kind of chart itself out. And then you get within that episode, and then you start looking for endings of acts.
Right. Okay, so you were required to, basically your first job was to write the first episode of the pilot, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so you did that, you broke it down, you did a Bible. And did the broadcast give you a time frame? You know, what, I mean, I'm trying to just get
it's
into
always
the smear.
Like, yeah, it's always like, you got to do this right now, and then nothing happens. That's kind of the deal.
Yeah.
So it was, I really don't remember the kind of time frames other than trying to fit it in between seasons of Orphan, trying to fit it in with other stuff Sienna was working on. But we wrote, let's see, I wrote that pilot, I think, Julia's here, she can correct me on this stuff. I think I wrote two scripts and the Bible for the season and sort of like one pagers on the other episodes. And I think at that point, they decided to go forward with it.
Okay. So up until then, had you brought in any help, any story editors, any juniors, or had it just been the Aubrey show?
At that point, it had been the Me show in as much as, I mean, other than the Giles Blunt show, I mean, because there's all this, you know, he was obviously like this material that I was working with was there. But at that point, when we got greenlit, it had just been me, I think. But I certainly brought some people in later as the process went along.
Yeah, because basically that was in about September, and you were going to go to camera in February of 2016.
Yes.
So you'd written 2 episodes, you had 4 still to go.
Right.
So how did you manage that?
I mean, it was not enough time.
Yeah.
It was like a stressful deal. We block shot it, so we had to we had to have the whole thing written in its entirety before we could even start. We basically had to have all the scripts written before we could prep. So it was a very short period of time, and we couldn't push it all because we needed winter, as you'll see. The winter's a big part of it. So there was this little window we were shooting for, and we just had to get the scripts done. And I think I just dove in and started going
And you brought in a couple of people.
Yes, because very early on, I brought in James Thorpe to help me break, to kind of refine the break of the season. Then I started writing based on that. And then as it got closer to kind of the doomsday line, I was like, this isn't happening. I'm not going to get it all done. So I brought Russ Cochran in to write one of the scripts. He was great. He was able to kind of parachute in, do some great story breaking with me in a very short period of time, and then go off and just pound out this draft. And then I could take it forward from there. So that was a huge, huge help.
So there's the lesson when in a jam. You chose him because you knew him well?
Yeah, I've worked with Russ on a couple of shows, and I really like the guy, and we have a kind of shorthand. And so he can, he's one of these guys who, like, when I get stressed out or I start to speak in sentence fragments, as you might witness tonight, and Russ is the guy who can kind of lock in on what I'm trying to say and just kind of like torque down on it and figure it out. He's just got a great brain for this stuff.
If you're in a jam, bring in someone who can think like you or at least understand your short sentences.
Exactly. Bring in, and Russ Cochran is often that guy. Bring that guy in.
So he wrote one of the episodes, and you managed to actually pull it off then and have all your scripts ready for prep.
That's not exactly true. We had five drafts and an outline, I think. Right. We were prepping off outline by the end. And
for
it was
the last
giving
episode.
The AD, like a ulcer. And I was like, I assure you, what's in the outline will be in the script. Yeah. It's a lie. Yeah. It's just a lie. But I did my best.
Good enough.
Yeah.
So time really defeated your goal of doing all six.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Well, on that note, let's take a look at Cardinal.
Oh, let's do it.
Murder, a cold case, a partnership where one cop is investigating the other. I'd keep watching. Congratulations, Aubrey.
Thanks.
So it's very interesting for those of you that haven't read Giles's book. This is actually a fairly faithful adaptation of the book. And I just want to ask you a bit about why you made that decision to stick so close to the book and just to talk a bit about that. So, because so many people use the book as a jumping off point, did you think it was a sort of requirement of doing a sort of six-part adaptation, as opposed to a longer dramatic series?
Yeah, the content of the book seemed to fit into this six-hour scheme well. There are other books in this series, so you can't go too far off the path because it needs to, come back if it's gonna continue. And I was brought onto the project to adapt the book, and so that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to try to be faithful to it. I made certain changes that are inevitable in the course of turning one form into another, but it was the book that got me interested, and so it was the book that I wanted to stay true to.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the character of Cardinal. He's your classic sort of taciturn detective,
yeah.
Right? And in the book, we're obviously privy to his inner dilemmas, his thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. So it's the old problem with adaptation. How do you take the silent, withdrawn hero and make him into a dramatic character on screen? And, how you would, because he's a very, there's a lot of issues going on. It's sort of the number one problem, it seems to me, with adaptation generally.
Sure, yeah, getting the
juicy stuff out.
Yeah, getting the juicy stuff out.
Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of probably the single largest change that I made to the book is that the kind of dark secret that this Cardinal fellow is carrying around with him. There's a pretty rich backstory. I pulled it forward into the present day to try and get it on screen, and I tweaked it so that it was sort of more active in the present day. In the book, the Cardinal's kind of history is all behind him. He's not activated on it. So it was a question of taking that material, finding a kind of current version of it that would work, and then activating Cardinal based on that drama so he gets to do stuff on screen. But that was definitely, that's a challenge, when you've got a kind of dude who's like at a reserve. That's kind of how we meet Cardinal, he's kind of blocking the world out, and then he kind of re-enters the world through the course of the series. But in the first episode, it's a bit of a hard problem to dramatize, which is that the guy's kind of not there. So we, you know, we wrestled with that a bit. I think that obviously one thing you want to do is you want to like cast a face that pulls you in. You want to cast like a likable and interesting face, and I think we really lucked out on that front with Billy Campbell.
Oh, he's fantastic. His eyes are amazing. Just really pulls you right in.
Yeah.
But that, so, yeah, so the decision to actually activate his backstory, so it used to be that, you know, it all had happened in the past, and we just hear him prattle on about it, basically. In the book, he's constantly sort of tormented by his past. So what Aubrey's done is he's sort of created this whole story that takes place in the present, the mysterious handing over the package to the truck. I've seen more than one episode, so I'm trying not to give too much away. So why not just let it play as an inner demon through it? It just wouldn't play. You felt you needed that.
Yeah, I mean, you need stuff on screen. You know, mm-hmm. you need drama on screen. And inner demons, I mean, obviously they'll get you partway there, but at some point it needs to. You need to put it on the screen. You need to put it into action. Yeah.
So, but you really did choose a very slow burn for the first episode.
Yes, it is a slow burn first episode. Yeah. That's true. The book's kind of a slow burn.
Yeah.
It was kind of what we embraced early on. There was some kind of, not pressure, but there was some talk about pulling forward. There's turns that come down the road. There's a pretty dramatic POV shift that happens. There was lots of talk about pulling that stuff forward, which is very much the trend in TV today, which is just, you know, it's just so hungry for story. So everything gets pulled forward.
Pack it into the pilot.
Mm-hmm. I kind of went down that road a little bit, realized that by doing that, we were going to find ourselves in a middle that had nothing to it. And so I kind of wanted to kind of live or die on the slow burn vibe of it, getting in. Pull in slowly, and then just start to add those other layers. Even the reveal that DeLorme is investigating Cardinal is a thing that happens much earlier, in earlier iterations of it, and even in the book, you're kind of aware of that earlier.
You know, right off the top, she's investigating him, and right. He even knows.
Right.
So that I think that was a really good decision. I was extremely surprised when I hit that point in the
right.
Well, that's
good.
Screening it. So let's just talk about DeLorme for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the book, she's single, so you chose to give her a husband. So talk a bit about that. The husband appears in one scene in the first episode. He plays more in later episodes.
It was just a case of when I read the book, DeLorme didn't quite come to life for me, and I wanted to find a way to flesh her out a little bit. The kind of long arc of this book, the series to a certain, this episode, season to a certain extent, but the book series in general is that, there's a kind of slow romance that builds between these two characters. But it's very hard to play any of that when there's a dead kid in the ice and a sick wife in the hospital and all this kind of gruesome stuff going on. So there's not a ton of it in the first mm-hmm. book. So it left DeLorme with kind of not much of an interior life that we got to see. So I just wanted to put her in flesh out her world, put her in contact with people, and watch some of the choices that she... build some drama around some of the choices that she makes mm-hmm. in her personal life and see how it reflects the choices she's making in her professional life.
It also gives an opportunity for her to talk to someone else about Cardinal, about her work,
yeah.
et cetera. Otherwise, she has no one to share that with. He's so... has such a great deal of animosity towards her right off the bat.
Yeah.
And why did you choose to do that, given that he doesn't know she's investigating him?
I think we were just playing him as kind of this guy who's a bit frozen and a bit like he's damaged goods, and he kind of sees DeLorme as, he sort of sorts in a very binary way. Is this person useful to me right now or not? And she just kind of slips into the not
useful. He's annoyed that he can't have McCloud. He's annoyed that he wants to
mm-hmm. solve the case, and he wants mm-hmm. the people who are best mm-hmm. equipped to do that, and he doesn't believe that she's necessarily that person.
Because it's interesting, this whole thing of the interior character, because I think the very fact that you've done that, dramatized him up to something, really helps, because it just shades it in a way. And also the way you play his wife, you know, that again, there's just a small scene here, mm-hmm. but that you just know that this is, you know, it's very much, you've made those decisions just to seed it in the first episode rather than to bonk us over the head, because the second episode goes much deeper into his character, it seems to me.
Right.
So, you mentioned the breaking of the POV.
Yeah.
So the classic detective story is you don't know who the killer is.
Right.
In the book, POV is broken, and you chose to.
It was a part about the book that I really dug. There's about like a third of the way through. The first third of the novel is a classic mystery, a classic whodunit. You're in the POV of the police, and then at some point you just drop into the POV of the killer. And it was really jarring and interesting when I read it, and I thought it was important to me to try and preserve that in the series. So by the end of the second, sort of as the kind of cliffhanger at the end of the second episode, you drop into the POV of the killer. And then from that point forward, it becomes much more of a sort of a thriller where you're kind of hoping the cops are going to catch up to the bad guys in time. And the mystery of the show sort of shifts over to what the hell's going on with Cardinal. And so that's when we get to experience a bit of that from DeLorme's POV. So that kind of balancing act, I thought Giles did really nicely in the book, and I just wanted to try and preserve that.
It's interesting because you actually broke POV almost at exactly the same point in the story at the end of the second episode. It very much paralleled the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, well, you just answered the second question, which was. How did that change the whole vibe of the episode? And so it stops being a mystery. It becomes much more. So the drive of the story shifts to, ultimately a sort of race against time a little bit. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about you as a showrunner.
Okay.
This was your first outing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Tell us about the difference between a writer on a series, like, you know, a senior writer on a series, and actually being the guy who holds the vision for the whole show.
Well,
what
it's...
go ahead.
The difference is the safety net is not there. You know, when you're a writer in a room and you pump out a script and then you pass it along to someone who's really good and they, like, fix it up and make it awesome and carry it forward. And so I didn't have anyone to pass it along to.
You're that guy now.
Yeah, so you're the safety net. So that's obviously a little bit daunting. And then the other thing is just the kind of the pace to it, the fact that you're pulled in several directions all the time, and then the post-production process is this whole other world that you, you know, generally speaking, as a writer, you don't get
a
ton of
part
exposure
of at
to.
All. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
What did you think was your greatest strength in that role?
Let's see. I mean, okay, so we block shot it. So this isn't necessarily my great strength, but this is the strength of having a single writer and a showrunner who's sort of on set a lot. We had to block shoot the whole thing. And so you really do, at that point, you really do need someone who's got the whole story up in their head from moment to moment, as changes have to be made for production reasons, or if the actors are thinking it might maybe taking it a different way, or the director's got a different idea. There needs to be someone who really is holding the whole story in their head. And I mean, I was that guy by default. Yeah. But that's an essential role in a single arc kind of story like this. So I think I was able to bring that.
Would you do it again this way if you were doing another six-parter?
I would do it if I had time.
Yes.
But you never do, so no, I wouldn't do it this way probably. I would bring in help.
How would you do it? What help would you bring in?
I'd just build a room just like normal.
You would sort of divide up the episodes.
That's right, yeah. Okay. I mean, if you had time, you could bring in friends and trusted colleagues to story edit you and help you sharpen the scripts and just get it all just dandy. But it just never seems to go that way.
Where did you feel the most confident then as a showrunner?
Well, I don't know. I'm most confident. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I felt like we constructed a story that I was comfortable with. I felt like the actors trusted the story and trusted me. I mean, I had done some directing before, so I felt like my on-set relationships with the people involved were healthy.
Yes.
And we could trust each other. But I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure I have a satisfying answer for you.
It's interesting because, you know, we often think of the showrunner as this lone wolf who, you know, puts the whole vision in place and what have you. But the more we've talked about this show, the more I get the sense of you having a team around you.
For sure. I mean, Julia and Jennifer were fantastic, heavily involved creatively from the get-go. Mm-hmm. We brought in a single director to do the whole thing, Daniel Grew.
I want to ask you about that, yeah.
I mean, he did a great job, and he was obviously sort of critical to the whole thing coming together. So, I mean, that's the other thing about this particular showrunner gig is it's slightly different than when you have episodic directors coming and going, and you kind of have to be the keeper of the vision, the person who's sort of on the sidelines keeping the vision. When you have one director doing the whole thing, it's a slightly different relationship. We sort of made the choice to give him more authorship of the set. So he was keeping that, you know, he was really a creative driver of that whole part of it.
It was a conscious decision to bring in one director.
Yeah, I mean, we were block shooting. It was the only way we were going to be able to do it.
So when you say block shooting, you actually shot scenes in one specific location that would take you through all six episodes.
That's right. Yeah, that's
incredible.
Yeah,
we block shoot on Murdoch. We do, or you know, many of you have the experience. What did you say?
Sorry? I just wouldn't recommend it.
Nightmare. I mean, you know, many of us block shoot two or three episodes at a time, but the idea of doing six, incredible. Yeah. Although I suppose it had a sort of sequential thing, like you didn't go back to the mine, for example, where the first body is found or whatever, or, you know, the certain things that change and shift through the course of the story.
Yeah.
So let's just talk a little bit about working with Daniel. Presumably you found it at the end of the day. A good experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the guy's great. He's a really talented dude. Yeah, and he's really, he knows his stuff and he's tireless. Like, he just, I mean, we put that guy through the ringer. And he was game, you know, and it was minus 30 degrees and all that stuff. And he just was up for that. Like, and he has, I mean, this show lives or dies on the vibe it creates, on the kind of tone of it, you know,
the atmospheric stuff.
And he really does, has this really beautiful, dreamy kind of style. It's showcased more even as the series goes along, but he just brought a ton to it.
So were there any points of difference between you and he?
Well, I mean, of course inevitably there are points of difference. But between two creative people who are
But what were they? You know, I mean, can you give us an example?
I think the one thing that was kind of this is a very dark show. It gets very, I mean, it's dark. It's kind of...
It gets darker.
It gets even darker. It goes to some very dark places. And it's a little relentlessly so. And my goal going in was to just find some moments to add a little bit of levity here and there. And it's not like I chalked the scripts full of these things, but occasionally there were little moments of lightness. And it just didn't quite seem to be Daniel's jam. Like, that wasn't the stuff that he really responded to. He really liked the dark stuff. So there were times where I was like, oh, that was a moment where we could have had a little sparkle of lightness. And it would get kind of somehow crushed in the making. And I'd be like, ugh. You know, so, I mean, stuff like that. That was one area where we kind of didn't necessarily.
So how did you resolve that? You gave in.
We fought. Yeah. No, we didn't. It's hard to, I mean, you know, you pick your battles. And you also go, this is in the hands of someone who really knows what he's doing. So it's not like I had to be right all the time. It was, you know.
No, but it's just interesting that thing of that idea of that sort of little, the black humor of we often see in cop shows or whatever.
Right. I mean, what I didn't want was cynical cops who are just making jokes over dead bodies. Because I see it a lot and the cops that I've met aren't that way. So that wasn't where I wanted to generate the humor. There were other spots, those other little spots. And, you know, it's weird. It's not like he killed them all. Sometimes we pull them out in editing because they don't work or whatever. But if there's one sort of difference in our kind of approach to the material, I try to see a little bit more humor in it.
So Winter is a massive character in this show. Should have its own credit, really. And the thing that I loved about it was that you feel the Winter, whether you're inside or out. Like, even when you're inside, if everybody's in coats or they're taking their boots off or they're putting their coats on, blah, blah, blah. We never escape from that.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure there were enormous challenges doing a northern shoot. Can you just give us a tiny bit of a sense of that?
And the first day was minus 35 degrees, and it was so cold that stuff didn't work. Like, just stuff didn't work. Mechanical things didn't work. Our tow car didn't work. Our camera mounts didn't work. And it was like day one, and we were just like going down in flames. And it was like, well, not flames, obviously. And people's mouths don't work. Like, it's so cold. So we had a disastrous first day that kind of put that kind of, like, Sudbury kind of went like, boom, there you go, welcome. Like, it just, and we made like, we scrambled to make half our day. it kind of evened out. We kind of found our stride in that stuff. But there was times when just it gets so cold that stuff just doesn't work anymore. So, and the other stupid thing about it was we went all the way to Sudbury to get this cold because we needed to go out and shoot on Frozen Lake. And it was bitterly cold when we got there, but it had just snapped cold like 2 weeks before. So all the ice was totally dangerous and unworkable. So we'd gone all the way there for ice. We just got the cold, but we didn't get the ice. We had to shift all our ice stuff towards the end of the season for it to thicken up enough for us to get out onto it and stuff like that. So, yeah, the weather hammered us. And then it, anyway, the weather, oh, man. And then it all melted, like when we had 2 weeks to go. There's like no snow. Suddenly we're trucking snow in and piling it on the streets and stuff like that to make it match the, you know, that thing.
Well, I think it's very effective, though. So it was worth all the work, just saying.
I mean, I love it. I love looking at it on the screen. I love that snow, and I love the crunch of the boots and all that stuff. Like, it's really cold.
It's so weird you can't fake it. That we don't shoot that much. Maybe you've just answered why we don't. That here we are. We live in the land of ice and snow, and most of our shoots are shot in, you know, the glorious summer.
Yeah.
I'm going to open this up to any questions from the floor. Oh, hang on a minute. They're going to come around with microphones. So don't ask your question until you get a microphone, because this is being podcast, so we have to keep everything on mics. Gentleman in the front row.
Is it on?
Oh, there we go. Hi. My question is with regards to DeLorme. How did you find her? And she's
that actress.
That actress, Karen, yes. Yeah.
The question is about how we found Karen Van Ness. She was actually she was the first person we thought of for that job. Julia and Jennifer had seen her work before I had, and then I checked her out. And as the show goes on, she just does such stellar work. Like, she's really spectacular and just smart and tough and doesn't take shit, but is a beautiful human being. I mean, we really lucked out. Performance-wise, every time people ask me about her performance, I segue into how nice of a human being she is, because we were just putting her through the ringer, and she was just so game about it the whole time. Does that answer your question? Yeah, she's terrific. Yeah. No, I mean, she's done a ton of work in Quebec. Like, she's done a ton of stuff. Like, she's in, like, so much stuff. Yeah. So I think this is her first English-Canadian show. But she was on Pan Am, that American show, for a while. And, she's done a ton of stuff. We were lucky to get her.
Going from just being a writer to the showrunner, what was the new responsibility that you had that you most enjoyed, that you didn't have as a writer that now as a showrunner you got to do?
I mean, I think it's the post process. You know, being part of that is fun. That's the part of the job where things are getting better. You know, like, often in production and in writing, and sometimes it can feel like you're kind of just crashing the whole time, and then you get into post and you cobble it all together, and then you start building it up again. So, I mean, I had had that experience a little bit making films and stuff, but it was nice to be part of that on the TV side. Obviously, casting it is, you know, is also a huge part of it that I liked. But I would say post, and more specifically, the VFX, which is something that I'd never done. I mean, there's a lot of VFX in the show that hopefully you don't notice, but it's there. We had to do a lot of stuff, and it was fun to go through that process because that was a new one for me.
I don't know if you've answered this already, but what was the total time from when you got the green light to finishing everything?
Well, we got the green light. I think it was. What did I say? September.
Yeah. So you said it was. You got the green light in September, and
right.
You had to be.
And then we were in.
You went
shooting
to camera in February, so it was lunacy.
Yeah. That's right, and we're still posting it. Like, it's really almost done, but we've got a couple of few last VFX shots.
What was the total number of shooting days?
48.
What the question was, what are the total number of shooting days?
Man, I tell you, my memory for this stuff. I think it was 45. Julia? Yeah, 45. Yeah. Eight days per episode, something like that. Days.
Hi. I hope this isn't obnoxious, but how would you articulate the theme, and were you really conscious of that as you were writing?
The theme. You know what? It's funny. I'm in a writer's room now with on Tassie Cameron's new show called 10 Days in the Valley, and she does this thing where you have to, when you're pitching your little one-pagers out, you have to write the theme of the episode, and the vibe of the episode is a way to... And I'm hopeless at it. Like, I'm just absolutely hopeless at it. Expressing things in theme, and I'm like, is that a theme? And they're always like, that's not a theme. That's like just a sentence. So I don't really think in terms of theme. I do think in terms of ideas, and I think in terms of things that mean something to me. You know, this show's very much about grief and loss and overcoming it and guilt. And, you know, I like ideas more than I think in terms of themes.
But grief and loss is the theme, isn't it?
I don't know. Is that a theme? I don't have any idea. Is that a theme? Those are just words. I thought theme was like power corrupts or something like that. I still don't know. I don't have any idea.
Grief is tough.
Like that. Yeah, grief is tough.
So in Success, you'll get to do this again, potentially, theoretically. What message, if you could send a message from you now to yourself last September when you were starting, what have you learned through the process that you wish you knew when you started?
Let's see. I got my hands on these sleeping pills because I couldn't sleep at all. No, That's a shitty answer. It's true, though. I got my hands on these sleeping pills because I could not sleep. Let's see. I mean, you know what? You kind of... It's stuff that you guys have done this stuff. You've experienced it before. It just happens in greater intensity. You have to be able to roll with it. You have to be able to pick your battles. You have to have stamina. You have to... go home at the end of a long day, and when all you want in the world is to have a drink and take a sleeping pill, not do that, actually do tomorrow's work. Like, it's a grind. You just got to get up for the grind. And, I kind of knew that going in, but I just didn't know quite how grindy it was.
Hi. There's been a lot of great... sort of dark crime series coming out of the Nordic countries in the last few years. Just wondered, I think this is going to stack up amazingly against some of those. Just wondering if you are a fan of that genre and if there are any sort of programs or even books in sort of the general headspace that kind of influenced you in your creative process?
I know those shows and I like the shows, the ones that I've seen. I'm not hugely steeped in the Nordic noir stuff or actually in mystery books too much, but I really like good cop shows. And it's the UK ones that I think of more often. Sally Wainwright is probably my favorite TV writer. And so I love Happy Valley and Scott and Bailey, these shows. And then Broadchurch, you know, was a really great sort of touchstone or reference point. Those are the shows that I look to study. They don't necessarily have the same, like I couldn't quite draw a direct link to this, but that's the stuff that I sort of immerse myself in and when I'm thinking about this stuff.
Can you talk a little bit about your relationship with the novelist and how that might have shifted in the course of production and how present he was when you were in production?
Yeah, so Giles Blunt wrote these books. I put myself in the head of the novelist a lot because, like, the guy spends his entire adult life writing these books. He writes six of them. They're really popular. They're like, you know, he invents these characters, he invents this place, and then some TV punk comes along and takes it away and makes a show. So I was like, that must be so weird. So he was involved very early on in the development of the show. By the time I was brought in, he was not so much actively involved. He had sort of, there had been some mutual decision at some point where he sort of said, you know, you guys take it. So I met him a couple times, but we didn't actually interact a ton. But I really did, I mean, God, it must be weird, right? Like, it must just be weird to see. That was the thing about it that I hadn't kind of considered going in, or just hadn't put a lot of thought to, which is that this child has another father, you know what I mean? And he's out there, and he's like, he cares.
You actually refer to it at one point as, like, when you first went in, you had this sort of idea that he would be a quasi, not actual, but like that you were almost co-writing with him.
Well, sure,
as the novelist, because you stuck so closely to the book.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I mean, he's definitely like the co-writer. But there are places where I made decisions to change things that I don't think he totally grooved on.
Do you know what that was? Just out of curiosity.
I mean, let's see. Delorme having a boyfriend, he thought it didn't set it up right to have that happen. There was changes to the backstory that I made and stuff. And I kind of heard through the grapevine that he wasn't totally like liking it all. But, I mean, I don't know what's so funny about that. But there's a point at which you have to, like, you know, you have to kind of put some of yourself in the thing, or there's no point in being there. Like, and so I was, you know, I was like, these choices make sense for what I'm trying to do. So that's how that happened.
It again goes to the whole thing of the sort of the conundrum of how you externalize the silent, solitary,
right,
you know, distanced hero. You got to do something, otherwise you're just watching a moody guy.
I think that a novelist doesn't necessarily know how greedy TV shows are for a story, like just how absolutely, you know, voracious they are. Is that the word? For just stuff happening. And so when I would make some stuff happen that wasn't necessarily in the book, he was like, yeah, that's not in the book. I don't know.
Kind of picking up on that, there's a lot of dialogues in novels. And how did you find taking the dialogue from the novel and putting it on the screen, where you obviously have much less dialogue? What was the challenge of that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think there's probably actually more dialogue specifically, like spoken word on screen, than there is in the novel. It's more of an internal, you know, narrative. You know, you kind of, you read the book, you steep yourself in the book, you think about the book a lot, and then at one point you just put the book aside. And then when you're writing the scenes, you're just trying to be honest about the two people or three people that are in the scene, whatever, you know, and then you just filter that through your own voice. So you just, I mean, I feel like you get to a certain place where you're like, I think I understand what Giles is trying to do here. I think I understand what he means to do with these characters and who these characters are. And then you just kind of put that aside and go.
So you don't go back to the book for the dialogue or look at the dialogue?
No, I didn't ever go back for the dialogue. I mean, I would go back to the book and check in on things for mood and events and to be sure I was staying true to it, but not so much for dialogue.
Somebody else? Any more questions? Oh, what did we get? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so my second question here is, obviously, you're taking scenes that are written out. Some scenes in the book probably spanning of 3 or 4 pages. This is a visual medium, so obviously you're making choices of taking text and making it visual, or creating a visual to describe the text that you found in the book. So, can you take us through that process, or what your thinking was in terms of how you picked out certain moments and put aside certain other moments?
Giles is a pretty cinematic writer. He does actually kind of create a landscape in your mind, and it's obviously important to him, the world and the environment. And so he really, I mean, there's lots in the book that I kind of just said, that's a really key visual moment, and we're just gonna pull it right into the script. I think it's, I mean, yeah, so I think that that's... then there's other instances where you just kind of... something that's an internal situation with Cardinal, you have to find a way to get it into a dialogue scene and maybe put it on the move a little bit between two characters. So you're just constantly pulling internal moments out and trying to dramatize them, putting them in people's mouths, putting people in opposition over the idea, putting them in an interesting space and putting it on the move. It's really the whole gig, really, is doing that very thing.
You have Billy Campbell, and a lot of in this episode, it's his facial expressions,
right,
which is being used as the inner dialogue that you read in the book.
Right.
So again, that's obviously something you wrote in the script, yeah, to say, okay, we want our lead character to do this, which is really taking place of that inner dialogue. So we as an audience ought to understand, okay, this is probably what's going through his head.
Right. That's right. So that's obviously a collaboration between, I try and get it on the screen direction, on the script. Billy reads it, has a thought about it. And then Daniel, the director, has a thought about it. And that kind of collaboration is sort of how we get to that. Yeah.
Thanks. Hi. I'm not familiar with the novel, but something that I observed in this screening is the strong attention to character. And when I hear you talking about these characters, you talk about grief and loss. And yet, if a one-liner to describe this series was something about it being a macabre story about a serial killer, one might not imagine that the creative persons behind this might be so focused on character. And I'm also a Sally Wainwright fanatic,
yeah,
and I think that's one of the things that sets her work apart from other writers, is that she has these macabre, really compelling storylines, but really at the heart of it is the deep characterizations that she creates. So I wonder if that's why you relate to her, and if that's perhaps why you think you might have been chosen to adapt this particular series. Is that one of your strengths? Does that drive you?
It's definitely the stuff I like. I mean, that's absolutely why I like Sally Wainwright, and it's absolutely kind of the stuff that I'm interested in trying to try to do. And that's sort of kind of what I was saying earlier about the book being written on a kind of scale that allowed for this exploration of human beings just being human beings, because that's what I always come back to when I'm like, that's for me, those are the shows that last are the ones that ultimately are just about that, like just about being folks trying to get by. So it's great to have the engine, the case, and Sally Wainwright's pretty killer at that too. But ultimately, those character moments are that's the stuff, right?
Hi.
Hi.
I just wondered, is there one character that you preferred writing over the others?
I really liked Lise. I liked Lise Delorme. I mean... yeah, I think I liked her because she was kind of... Well, you know, I like Cardinal, too. I mean, no, I can't pick one. I can't pick one.
But you did a good job on Lise Delorme, I thought.
Thanks.
Really did. Because in the book, she's... because you know from the very beginning that she's investigating Cardinal from the very beginning of the book. There's immediately this sort of oppositional thing, and she's got this constant inner dialogue about it, about her doing that. Mm-hmm. But I thought what you did, one of the things I liked about what you did with the character, is you put her in this bloody difficult situation with this obnoxious, frankly, the way he treats her, mm-hmm, like, you know, not pulling her into the great scene there. And then, you know, you have her go tabernacle, and then she goes. That I thought you actually created, but she's at the same time, she's not pushy, she's just quiet, she's kind of just determined. I thought you did a very nice job with that, actually. And I think I can see your enjoyment of writing that character.
Yeah, I mean, I dig her. She's cool. She's tough and she's cool and she's smart. And it was fun to put those, you know, the kind of coming together of those two characters as the season goes along. It's nice to have them in this very oppositional position at the beginning and just watch them come together.
Yeah, that's very satisfying. It definitely, that does happen, I can tell you. Any other questions? I just want to ask you, Aubrey, you didn't seek this book out. It was very kindly sought out by someone else. Yeah. But what advice would you have for writers looking for a book to adapt? I mean, I know many people are, you know, scurrying, looking through the bookshelves, looking through the da-da-da, trying to find something. What would you look for now if you were going to look for another book to adapt?
Again, I think that the engine is a big part of it. Yeah. It's, again, it depends what you're doing. If you're doing Murdoch Mysteries, which is going to go for six seasons or whatever, you're going to do 60 hours, you're probably looking for a different thing. If you're doing a sort of limited series like this, then you're probably looking for that arc. You're looking for that central character's journey, like a feature film, like a long feature film, where you're going to kind of arc that out over the season. And then you just want there to be ideas in there that you can sink your teeth into, like personally, like that you give a shit about. Like that's ultimately the only way you're going to get through is if there's stuff in there that's interesting to you to explore and to tear open and So look for stuff that's got the engine, it's got the characters, it's got the world, and then in there as well, it's got ideas that you're just interested in, that are just interesting to you and compelling to you. Because on the dark days, those are the ones that are gonna pull you forward.
But it's so interesting that you say that thing about the narrative drive, because so many Canadian books don't have that, and it's like
so many Canadian films don't have that.
Let's say that too, but that. So it's that idea of trying to find the book that has all that, and then because you can create the narrative, I suppose. I mean, as a screenwriter, you can do that. You did this in this film, in this show, in terms of dramatizing his whole backstory.
Oh, right.
You know
yes.
what I mean? Like, so it's, anyway, I think it's just very interesting, that idea of how much do you need from the book, and then how much can you add to it?
Right.
Because, I mean, it's very hard to find a book that comes with the whole package.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, they're pretty rare.
Yeah,
for sure.
Are there any final questions? I have one more for Aubrey, which is, I'm sure there are people in this audience who would like to know, what would it take to be hired by Aubrey Neelan?
I guess you're mostly writers, right? Like, I think the thing, it depends a little bit on what you're being hired for. If you're being hired for an episodic procedural.
As a writer, yeah.
I mean, I know you're going to hire you as writers, yeah. But what show? I mean, different shows have different demands. Ultimately, you want someone who is has a voice, has something to say, and for me, it's someone who's excited by the human condition, excited by human beings. I want people who can do plot and who can do all that stuff. That's totally essential, but ultimately, you want to be sitting in a room jamming with someone who like cares about being a human and how weird it is and how messy it is and how interesting it is and who can find drama in those little exchanges between people, because that's the stuff I like to watch, and you know that's the stuff I try to make. So if you're excited by that, you're hired.
Okay. So Cardinal is going to be on CTV in the new year. We don't know the dates yet, right?
That's right.
Okay, January? We don't know.
I think so.
Okay, probably sometime in January. It's 6 parts, and I think you'll really enjoy seeing what happens next. So, Aubrey, thank you.
Thanks
and congratulations.
So much, Kara. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Writers Talking TV, featuring Aubrey Neelan, showrunner of Cardinal. Writers Talking TV is presented by the Writers Guild of Canada. All of Writers Talking TV podcasts can be found on the Writers Guild website, wgc.ca, and at iTunes. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share your feedback at iTunes or email writerstalkingtv@gmail.com. That's writerstalkingtv, one word, @gmail.com. Special thanks to the team at TIFF Bell Lightbox and to the podcast technical producer, Philip Bukovic. I'm Carol Hay. Thanks for listening.